This is Steve Sherlock with another internet radio show or podcast number 159 in the series for Franklin Matters. This recording shares the Department of Public Works Waterworks presentation in discussion section from the town council meeting held here in Franklin on Wednesday, January 30, 2019. DPW Director Robert Rudis Cantareggi and Water Superintendent Laurie Rosella join in the presentation and Q&A. My notes from the session can be found in the link provided in the show notes. One key question was asked by Councilor Debbie Pellegrini about the water supply capacity and new growth. That question begins at about 24 minutes. Clearly, there are other good questions and good information during the presentation, but this is one question that comes up periodically, and this is a good answer, and it's been recorded. The total section of this meeting runs about 47 minutes. So without further ado, here is the audio recording.
Okay, presentations and discussions. Public Works water presentation.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bruce Cantareggi. I'm the DPW director, and tonight joining me is Ms. Laurie Rosella. She's the water and sewer superintendent for the town. So I'll give you a little presentation on our waterworks overview. Just some statistics for the folks at home. Obviously the population's around 34,000 now. We have 209 lane miles of roadway, 27 square miles. And what's unique about Franklin is we get all our drinking water from wells. We have 14 number of wells in town. We're the largest groundwater producer in the state as far as municipality goes. Municipalities our size normally have a reservoir or they get it from rivers, but we're very, very large groundwater. We have about 160 miles of waterworks in the ground. We have 148 miles of sewer. We have about 128 miles of drain pipe. So water regulatory issues, permit requirements. I think we've been before you quite a few times. The state mandates, well, they put in our permits that we're supposed to have less than 65 gallons per resident per day or less, and then less than 10% unaccounted for water. I can tell you that we've always not exceeded that. We were in trouble back in the statement I always make is around the turn of the century that Franklin was somewhat known as the bastard stepchild of water resource management for the state of Massachusetts. We were used as an example of what was wrong, particularly the groundwater system. In that time, it's been completely changed. We are now the role model, I'd say, that we've won numerous awards that, people look to Franklin now to see how we did it, how we've done it, and how our water conservation program has done it. We're truly recognized throughout the state. The reason, we have a lot of these issues because we couldn't meet demand. As you remember, during the 90s, folks that were here, there's a massive development going on, and there's a lot of haphazard. There's no planning for the future, and water was just being used all the time. And you can't always forget that one of the primary reasons that public water supplies were brought into effect wasn't always just for drinking water, it was for fire suppression. So that was one of the original reasons that, way back in the day, they brought water systems to the town. And we were having a hard time dealing with that, and then conservation, obviously. So the implementation, how did we get to where we were? Obviously through public education about water, our water conservation program. Everybody knows, the Franklin Lawn type thing. We have a one day a week watering in our town, which is part of our permit. It also gives us a little more leeway compared to other communities that we can implement our conservation plan that starts in Memorial Day, where most communities have to start their plans the 1st of May, and then we get to lift ours if the timing is right around Labor Day, and while other communities have to go farther. So that does work out. We made extensive repairs to our distribution system because we had a very, very leaky system. That's not good because, you pump the water from the ground before it gets to the end user, it's just being lost. And, particularly over the last 20 years, everybody knows the energy costs. you know, if you're losing 20% of your everything you're taking out of the ground and you're not being able to build for it, you're still paying for the energy associated with that. So just tightening up the system was huge. Also, the chemical use in the system, because we do have to treat our system for various, obviously, antibacterial, but also for iron and manganese suppression and other things like that. So those chemicals are wasted. Obviously, the council, we'll talk a little more later, is the new water line, new roads program. It's been very successful in this town, where we go in and we use water funds to supplement the road repairs. And I think you know we do an extensive repair. We're not just fixing the water issue that might be in that road. We fix the sewer issue that road. We work with the gas companies to, or the gas company to get everything updated at the same time. So we can go in and complete a whole road and get it done. And hopefully that road's gonna last the next 50 years instead of where some communities might just replace a water line. And if you drive to these towns, you still see that trench going down the end of the, you know, down the middle of the road. It's just, it doesn't work out. So we take into everything. We have an extensive leak detection program that was started. I mean, the state mandates and the permit that you do it every other year. We do it every year in Franklin. We find minimal leaks now. You know, Laurie can testify that, where we used to have a lot of big ones. We're mostly finding now is actually service leaks. You know, we find them on private properties, and we aggressively go after that. We work with the homeowners to get those fixed, because we got to get these leaks fixed before it gets to the meter. So the, we do quite a bit of that. And then Laurie's taken the charge over the last 4 years, I'd say. You know, the meter replacement program. A lot of our meters were older. They recommended it be replaced every 20 years, so we had some that were older. So we've been doing some in-house, and we outsourced some of them. I mean, we call our meters our cash register. If they're not working correctly, we can't correctly account for the water. And I can tell you that when a water meter starts to fail, okay, it doesn't read high, it reads low, okay? And no one ever calls and says, gee, my water bill's a little low, okay? So it's important that we go after these meters and fix them. And we're gonna talk about later in the capital program, but we've done a lion's share of them. We're actually requesting less money. We've done a pretty good job with that. So I kind of talked about this before. We conducted annual leak detection programs. We exceeded the limits. Since 2001, we've had over 700 leaks been fixed and repaired. Tighter system, reduction in unaccounted for water, improved system management, reduced pumping and treatment.
You know what our unaccounted water rate is?
Yes. That last year?
Nine.
9%, which is low. It was up a little last year, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, previously we were down to as low as 5 in previous years.
The big one I get to, I think we have a slide for, is like actual the per capita. So our water main replacement program is underway. Goal replace the entire system with 80 years. We've been on track to do that. We're one of the very few communities in Massachusetts has been doing that, and that's what's recommended. We say the residents are happy with the new roads. We always make the joke that no one really cares what's underneath the road. They just want to be able to travel on the top and not hit a pothole, particularly this time of year. So, but that seems to be working out. Obviously, we've had a strong support from the council. We're looking at, you know, phase four of this program, five of this program, so we've been doing that. And then we've, like I said, we've been recognized 2008, 2013, 2018 as MassD Public System Awards for being the best in the state. But with that, as you all know, there's been increased water costs. The cost that we have to deliver goes up. So this shows you, this is a pretty good slide that we use quite a bit. This is average daily pumping, and it goes back to 2001. So on an average daily day, we were at 3.6 million, and our population was around 30,000. So if you look at last year, we're down less than, I think we're about 2.5. on average daily, give around there. But you can see our population has gone up. And you can see how the average daily use has gone down tremendously. So, but this, you know, it all ties into the cost of water. So this is our unaccounted for water. It goes back to 2004 when we started doing up to, you know, 14%. So, you know, we pump over a billion gallons of water a year. So if you think about losing 14% of that water, that's a lot of water that goes back into the ground that we pull up and treat at 14%. So it's pretty substantial. Waterworks future concerns, iron and manganese. This is one of our hydrants, you know, flushing. This is actually down at a well where, you know, we're cleaning out the well head there. But we don't want to send that water out to the drinking system. But that shows you what we're getting out of the ground. As you know, 10 years ago, we brought on a treatment plant down at the DPW that took care of the first four wells. That's an ultrafiltration system. And that's specifically to handle that. So it gets out the iron and manganese. But we have some other issues, some other wells. But this is a typical problem that we have in all our wells in town, all our drinking waters, is a high level iron and manganese in our water system. And the older the wells get, you tend to pull in the iron and manganese more of it. This shows just some more iron and manganese issues. This is all pictures from our stuff. So it's pretty funky, it's slimy. It's the iron and manganese, I don't want you, and anything too much, you know, it's more of a turbidity problem, but it's not necessarily a carcinogen or something like that. But obviously, we don't want to put that into our system. So one of the issues we're dealing with right now is wells 3 and 6, and then we've come before you, obviously, going through that. Well 3 is only pumping 0.25 million gallons per day. It's permitted for 0.5 million gallons per day. Well 6 hasn't been pumping nothing. We had to turn it off in 206 because the water quality was so bad. But that's permitted for almost 3/4 of a million gallons per day. So we're looking for a new treatment plan for wells 3 and 6. And we're gonna, you know, we did the design, obviously, and now we've gone through the study and working through that right now. And that's gonna be a green sand filter. It's an old, it's a different technology than the ultrafiltration system that we're using in 1 and 2. It's an effective way to get these wells back online. So it's 90% design. We'll be able to treat the full water that we're permitted down there. Install a replacement well of both wells to increase production to the permitted volume. It's just so you know, it's designed for expansion if the groundwater continues to deteriorate. You know, the iron and manganese levels are not gonna get any less out there. So we potentially could go up in the next 10 to 15 years. So this plan is designed for future expansion inside the building. We applied for an SRF funding. And if you're not familiar with that, that's a state subsidized funding where you can borrow money at 2%. And it saves us, Jeff's the numbers expert, but on the whole thing, it'll save a substantial amount of money.
$4.5 million.
Save us $4.5 million over the borrowing of this. And we were, because of the water quality issue and our request that we put together, we're number one on the state list this year. So there is funds available, and I don't see any reason why we won't be authorized to use that. So the estimated cost for this new treatment facility is $11.8 million. So the schedule is we'll bid in the spring of 2019, construction to start late summer 2018, and operational by 2021. This is another program working on the map, you know, clearly over there. This shows you all the water mains that we have replaced and we're working on right now in town, and then what we proposed going forward, what to do. This is the actual list, what we're going to be seeking funds for. And it's the section of Lincoln Street from the Squire Street, you know, basically from the downtown area out to Brook Street. I think you guys all know that that road's kind of in tough shape, highly traveled road. It's also, that has AC pipe, the old asbestos concrete pipe that we tend to have problems with. And you know that we did the other major section of Lincoln Street from Brook Street out to Daniels, just up towards Skyline area. That was a wonderful project, remember that? Everybody was happy, because there's no detours out there. That was a long project, but you know, now it's great. And then we're looking at the McIntosh neighborhood. If you've been down there, that road was basically put on top of a filled-in stream, I believe. So that it's a lot of issues are going on down there. Besides water main breaks, there's drainage issues, and the road's just in awful condition. Arlington Street area, Howard Place, North Park, that's the last kind of section over there we want to get done. That's all cast iron pipe. That pipe's pre of 1940s, I'd say. It's you know, it's older, junkier pipe we want to clean up. Country Club Drive area, Once again, some AC pipe, want to go do some improvements out there. And then Janie Ave area, Schofield and those areas, and clean up that up over off of Pond Street. That's looking for our plan for the next phase going forward for the water main replacement. New growth in town, obviously we have to look forward to that. You know, the numbers that I get from the planning, that we have a, you know, 1,000 plus units, you know, coming forward, whether it's the big ones. I know the stuff over in Dean Ave, you know, we have new proposed housing developments going in. So this is, when we say, you know, units prepared, that's, you know, that could be apartments, condos, or the, you know, housing stock that, you know, we get. So potential new demand for residential growth, the water system would, you know, when we do our estimates, we're looking at basically 750,000 gallons more per day. You know, there's unknown new demands, expansion, desirable industrial areas. We never know what's going to happen. For example, Gorelick Farms, you know, they consolidated into Franklin. So, you know, their water use has gone up. They, you know, and they're our biggest customer. They're using 1 million gallons a day. So, but they're up over that. So that's the one thing we never know. You know, who's going to come in, who's going to, you know, we're all hoping for the new, I don't know, beer distributor to move to town. And, you know, that's good. They're good for business. The marijuana people are excellent because, you know what, we charge them for sewer too, and they use a lot of water to grow that marijuana, and it doesn't go out. So they're an excellent customer we didn't see coming, but that's good. We have to look at the increased wear and tear in the drinking water and the sewer systems, obviously going through it. And then we've also looked at attempts to modify existing DEP groundwater withdrawal permit. You know, that's not happening. I mean, it's just a very, very difficult thing to do. It's expensive. And one of the big things that DEP has done with new permits, if you look at different communities, when they get a new well, they're tying everything into to the river flow. So like particularly in the Charles River Basin. So what they do is they'll permit you, say they permit you a new well and you get 1 million gallons a day. They'll say if the level of the river goes down to a certain, you have to turn it off. So typically you have to turn the well off in the summertime because that's when the river goes low. And we battle the whole thing about how they actually, you know, tie together. But they still do that. They put the restrictions on the well. So when you really need the well, you can't really use it. That's a conundrum that some towns deal with. But none of our wells have that restriction on them now. So that helps us out a lot. With that said, we're very, you know, we're recognized. I think you know we have a very good relationship with Charles River Watershed Association. They get us awards too for what we do. We have sub-basins in town, and we try to work with the sub-basins. So like typically this time of year, we're trying to pull more water down by the Charles River when the Charles River is high. So that would be like wells 4 and 5, you know, down in Miller Street area. And then in the summer when, you know, things, you know, it's all different, but things dry up. We tend to pull more from up in wells 1 and 2, the Mine Brook up by the DPW, that's away from, I mean, it's all same basin. But we try to do that to help them, and they appreciate that going through that, so we're not drawing down on the river. So we try to be you know, good environmental friends that way. So this is the one we always get to deal with, you know, the annual cost per resident. I used the word before, you know, conundrum. We're doing a wonderful job of you know, delivering good water, quality water, rebuilding roads, tightening up our system. But it goes back to the whole thing is, you know, the less water you sell, the less water you collect, your money you collect. So we're going through the system and we're selling less water, but you know, a lot of our costs are fixed. We still have, you know, employees have to go out there every day. We still have to maintain our system. We have the chemical, well, the chemical cost based on the water, but they've gone up. And also we have to do with electricity and just the general maintenance of the system. So that's, you know, this is just a fact of life. And you know, I on the other hand, when I go to do presentations in front of DP conservation, you know, I tell them, I said, yeah, everybody's like, oh, you're doing a great job, you're doing a great job. But don't forget, you know, water costs in Franklin have gone up 300%, you know, the last 15 years. So there is a cost associated with this. So, and that's what, you know, we work with the administration. It's always trying to come up with a balance of, you know, what's acceptable and, you know, what we can do. These are some of the, that I throw out there, the feel good stuff, a bunch of, you know, grants that we've gotten for our water system that, you know, save the town some money on it, get the state the recognition. A lot more grants. We've gotten over $1 million worth of grants, Jeff, I think. Yeah, 1.2 million since I've been here. We write a lot of grants. We write, for this water conservation, it's always a big thing with the state, and we're recognizing. We're getting grants sometimes bigger than the city of Worcester, for doing some of the work we do out here and trying different things. And a lot of the house, I just want to say, with the public works, a lot of these grants that we get, if you look at the 319 grants, the EPA pilot studies, a lot of these grants are they're what we call in-kind services. So they'll pay for 60% of the grant, and then 40% has to be done by the town. So it could be my time, Laurie's time, it could be the crew's time going out building something, so we can actually build it. So we're doing something productive and we're getting money back from it. So it's worked out really well, and we have a good relationship with stuff like that. And here's just some of the, the awards we get, doing a great job. That's pretty much it. If you got any questions on the water work.
Okay, I'll open up to questions. I think Mr. Jones had his hand up first. Councilor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Otis, a couple of quick questions. One, the cost of KOH, potassium hydroxide, as well as the cost of fluorides, has that remained a constant or a consistent cost in regards to the treated water?
Since I've been here, it's always going up per se, but it has been volatile. There was a couple of years back, and we were dealing with the KOH and fluoride. We're getting bad fluoride issues with it coming out of China. It was very expensive. Mm-hmm. Typically, when the economy goes up, we get quality issues. I mean, Laurie runs all the numbers on that. So, you want to add anything?
No, I think the KOH has been pretty consistent the last few years, but we have to bid it every 2 years, so we'll know, for next budgeting year, and actually won't know until June.
General idea what the cost of fluoride treatment would be per year?
$350?
Yeah.
All in? For all treatments?
No, just the fluoride.
Yeah,
I understand the KOH is for the purposes of balancing the system in order to keep the acidity level at certain levels, and those are the pipes on the road.
Correct.
Fluoride seems almost like an option in some senses.
Right. Fluoride is, not every town puts fluoride in a town. It's put in by town vote whether or not there's fluoride. In general, fluoride is the least expensive chemical we use, but I wouldn't want to throw out a number and be wrong, but it's the least expensive.
It's in the hundred thousands, though.
No.
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 Something we can cost. I don't know how my fellow councilors feel about fluoride. I don't particularly think it's a necessity to treat our water with, but that's a different debate for a different time. In regards to the waste disposal, so the iron and the manganese that's pulled out of well 3 and 6 is shut down, as well as any other treatments that's pulled off the other wells, what do we do with that waste? What do we do with the waste?
Goes to the sewer system.
It goes back into our sewer system?
Well, yeah, and then it's treated at the Charles River District.
Okay, so it is treated. It's not just dumped off in the
sewer. No, it ends up, in the sludge of the treatment plant, which is then hauled to a landfill somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah, so the treatment facilities for wells 1 and 2 and or 13 and 14, whatever, that's all they got named. So that treatment plant, it's a filter system. So what happens is, the water goes through, it's back flush, it's held in containment tanks underneath, and all the iron and manganese will settle out. And then there's pumps down there that are collected. And then we have a small sewer lift station down at the garage that pumps into sewer. And then monthly, we have to go down there pretty much and clean the tanks out because.
Every 5 or 6 months.
Oh, 5 or 6 months.
So that's added into the interceptor that's getting pumped up towards.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
And then through the chair, if I might, I was also just curious to ask about chloride levels. We have a number of wells that are relatively close to 495, and the state definitely loves to salt, especially on a night like tonight. So I was just curious about that in terms of runoff into our wells, if that's any kind of an issue with ones that are closest to the highway.
Yeah, it's not just the ones near the highway. Franklin uses a lot of salt too. Our sodium and fluoride levels are higher. If you look at our annual report, sodium has to be reported, and we are above the. It's not a MCL. It's not a standard, but it's a health advisory, and we're well above the health advisory for sodium.
I've brought this up before, and it's we have chosen wells that are close to 495, but as Laurie says, like we're salting tonight, our sodium content is high, and it's typically high in the springtime until it's, you know, flushed through the system like anything else. But, you know, it, once again, it's a balancing act. You know, you wear the water hat one day, but you're also doing the public safety hat the next day about, you know, keeping the roads clear. So that's it's a constant balance of what we're trying to do. But we are aware of that, and, you know, could be a little hypertension in Franklin because of the salt, but that's just something you have to deal with. But the other option is, you know, we don't salt as much, and you put sand out, costs associated with that, and the roads aren't going to be safe. So it's just a constant battle both ways.
Thank you.
How's that, Councilor?
I'd like to talk about the new growth in Franklin. And you just mentioned that we're going to be having over 1,000 units within the next years, couple of years. And we've had so many just within the past few years. Do you ever envision no water band? And how do we explain to residents that we're building and building and building and we have a water band?
So I got to clarify one thing. It's not a water ban. We have what's called a water conservation plan, and that's mandated by the state. Okay, so with our well withdrawal permits, it's not necessarily something at our level. That's what the state said. We had the wettest year on record, and we still have to have that conservation plan. Okay, what happened last year is, remember, we did have a water ban. That was self-imposed on us because our water withdrawal levels were going down. And we had that, we started early. I think we started like in April.
2 years ago.
2 years ago. We started in April. And then we were also doing doing work at wells, or our treatment plant 1 and 2, we're changing out the filters. So that system was offline. And then we, you know, even though they said we could lift the water conservation plan or the ban, but remember we went to a full ban, we kept that through the fall. So a lot of that is it's just requirements by the state. And that also has to, we have to look at the number of folks. When I talked about the 65 gallons per day. But the other thing that we do, the conservation plan allows us to, and this is policy stuff, you know, we're providing the water, but the policy stuff as far as, you know, how the town's growing and what choices, you know, that's the council, the planning board, the zoning, and everything else. But, you know, we're at the point, you know, we can meet it. Additionally, with these new wells online, you know, we're back online, wells 3 and 6 are production where they should be. We've looked at, and you've heard, you've been around for a while, we've looked at all different things in this town. We looked at permitting new wells, like finding new wells. We have a couple of sources in town. We looked at buying water from other communities. And we looked at conservation in our own system and, you know, fixing our own wells. So we did the conservation part. We're really good at conservation, I think, and that's recognized. So we're using our water very, very wisely. So the next thing is, what's the next best thing to do? So it was actually, going through all different processes, I'll actually give Mr. Parada back there the credit on this one, because we were looking at different things. And he's like, hey, boss, we got to look at wells 3 and 6, you know, because we're permitted for this. We control that. It's registered water, so the state can't put any more regulations on them. And if we fix those, it's going to give us the additional, one's off though. It's going to give us almost an extra 750,000 gallons a day, which is good for our system because it gives us redundancy. You know, we can rest other wells. It also gives us the option, you know, direction going forward for future development or future, you know, business that come to town and need more water. So that's how we look at the system. We're looking at the things that we can do the most cost-effective way with the least amount of regulation on it that we can provide the water that's being demanded for the town. Does that answer your question?
Well, I hope it answers for the residents that are listening, because I hear it constantly, and I'm sure you people all hear it too. Why are we doing all this building? And I know you can't just stop building. It's rules and regulations and all that follow. But wasn't it like the 1989 type area where we had so much building? Wasn't there some type of a moratorium that was going to put on for water?
No, because of water.
There was two things. There was a sewer moratorium, and we actually had overflow in Fletcher Field. And we had a growth bylaw that was passed, but never used, because by the time it was passed, the big growth had bypassed Franklin. So if you look at the building permits in 94, 95, 96, they were about 350 homes a year. And by the time they got the bylaw into effect in about, and everybody was grandfathered as well. So the time the bylaw passed, the housing boom and the economy tanked, and so it never was implemented, but there was one. I think the summarize is, in a couple of years when you have wells 3 and 6 on, you'll have an extra 1 million gallons of capacity that you don't have today because they're offline. So if we're going to use 200,000 gallons more than we're using today, we'll still have 800,000 gallons of water available just from that well. I mean, what's our total daily legal output?
3.14.
And what are we pumping today?
Last year was 2.4.
So we have 800,000 gallons of, almost 800,000 gallons of more water we can pump legally. And that's with the new well online. I mean, the treatment plant. So if you ever get to that point, that's it.
And additionally, you gotta look at too, you gotta look at the time of year demand. So we average, say 2.1, 2.2. But the summer, we're pushing the limit. Even when with the conservation plan in place, you know, even do one day a week. If we went back to the four, I mean, there was, before we had all these things in place, there were days, I remember talking to Tony Muccheroni, we were doing 7-8 million gallons a day. I mean, it's just unheard of. And it was really taxing the system and drawing it down. And then we couldn't keep up. The whole thing is our tanks. We gotta keep our tank levels up because we have to have the fire suppression. So when this water starts going down, you might have be able to turn your tap on your house, but if you ever had a big fire demand, you don't have the backup in these tanks to handle that capacity. So that's the, you know, God forbid nothing like that ever happens. But that's what we're really focused on, being able to keep up with the levels of the tanks.
Okay, thank you.
Councilor DeLocco.
Just a quick question. Now, private wells, how much damage do they do to our water system? I mean, I have a private well. I'm just kind of curious.
Well, the question, damage to our system?
Yeah.
You don't really damage our system. You're not part of it.
Yeah.
But,
do we draw more, bring the water level down?
We're all, we're all drawing from the same aquifers.
Yeah.
So to say it doesn't affect it would not be true. To say it affects it would be true. You know, it's like anything else. It depends on
location,
time of year. Like right now, you take all your water you want. We got water come out everywhere now. I've never seen such a wet winter. And but 2 years ago, it probably did affect more because our drawdowns were way down. We had to turn off right across Street 9 because remember the draw. It's just such a shallow well. Our well, if you have a drinking water well for your house, typically that's a bedrock well. It's a deep well.
Yeah, it might be.
It's at least
430.
Yeah, give or take. Our wells were called gravel pack wells. They're anywhere between 30 to 60 feet down. And it's basically, you think about gravel, it's stones together and there's water. It's almost like an underground pond. And it's not the clay area that you see on the north side of town. It's like a beachy type sand. It's filled with water. If you're ever at the beach and you dig a hole and it all fills in, that's kind of what a gravel, but that's how shallow our wells are. But as that goes down, we get less in that pocket because it's surrounded. So does it affect it? Yes, but they're not necessarily pulling out of
we have plenty of water, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of curious about that. Nothing we can do about it.
No.
Yeah.
Councilor Kinnison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So for the residents that live by the wells with all the iron and manganese, do we alert them or send them notices like we're going to be draining soon or don't consume water for X amount of period, or how does that work?
Do you mean because of that picture he showed you?
Yeah,
so that's on the, it's downstream of the treatment plant. It's nowhere near a customer.
Okay.
After it goes through that pipe, it goes through the treatment plant and then out to the distribution system. So
got it.
That's never is in the distribution system.
Got it, okay.
You would kill us.
Yeah.
You would, there would be picks and forks out there. We'd be Norton. Norton's having a problem.
That is, we're trying to back flush the line that the water comes out of, so that's worse than what's actually coming out of the ground. It does just show you how much iron and manganese is there, but that's never in the distribution system.
Got it.
Make that clear.
Councilor Hammond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have kind of a basic question about the permits and like, so it was this, after 65 gallons per person that the town can draw out of the wells, is that because of the type of well, or is that just for any?
Statewide. Except MWRA.
Yep.
Okay, yeah, but it, okay, so it comes from the state, but is it different for different types of wells? Because you said a lot of places have used rivers, or they use reservoirs, or?
That's a conservation measure.
Yeah, it's a town standard, but as Jeff said, or the state standard, but as Jeff says, you know, the MWRA is exempt from that. Any community that's on that, like Boston.
Right.
So the 65 gallons a day in general terms is, some communities have a hard time hitting that. And it's particularly communities similar to ours that have, you know,
lawns.
Because that's what they're gonna have a hard time with it. We're down to, what were we last year?
For what?
Average daily.
2.4.
No, per household.
Oh, 45.
45, which I got to tell you, I mean, when we first went under 65, I was happy, then we're under 55. I get down to 45, I get nervous because I think the state's not going to say you're going to be under 50 all the time. 45 numbers is like Boston numbers. If you think about it, there's not a lot of green space per house. It's very, very low. There's no community like our size is 45.
So it doesn't matter how you get your water, where it comes from, what type of well on the ground.
No, just conservation measures.
That's,
yep.
Okay.
It's if you have a water management permit, that's where they can put that requirement on you. Not every town has a permit.
And then every well has its own permit for a certain amount.
Yes.
Right. And how do they decide that?
Ours were done a long time ago, but it's
they do
it's
tests.
Through a pumping test.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's pumps. They pump the test over a period of time, and they have to find the level at which it levels
refills
out
maybe.
And doesn't. Yeah. So it causes the water level in the well to drop, and you have to find the pumping rate that keeps that stable, that you're not just continually pulling it down.
Right. Okay.
So that's where that's how they figure it out through a pumping test.
Okay.
And they use a bunch of monitoring wells, they'll put those all in and see the levels that go down, and it's called a 48-hour test, and they pump the wells as much as they can, see what the effects are. Because, you know, other communities have like tried to put wells near ours, and they affect our wells.
Yeah.
So we say, no, you cannot put a well there to do something like that. So.
Okay, I have one other question about one of the charts. did the use chart include the unaccounted water? So you have a use chart there, and it has like.
Yes, I think that's the total average day demand, which
just
yes,
like
includes everything.
The loss of water.
Yeah, it's everything that goes out of our wells and pump stations.
Okay, so we have a lot less unaccounted for, so some of that.
Yeah, so the 45. Gallons per person per day is based on that residential metered volume,
okay,
as opposed to what goes out of the wells.
Okay.
So that what's lost is not included in that number.
Okay, great. Thank you. That was very interesting. Thanks.
He's already had his first chance. Councilor Kelly.
First question is, how many water and storage employees do we have that are dedicated to our water?
We have 10 water and 5 sewer.
15 in total.
Not including me.
Not including 16 total.
And part of me.
And part of a lot
third
of people.
Me,
yeah.
So I guess my question, my largest question is, we're talking about sewer water treatment plant for, is it wells 3 and 5?
6.
3 and 6. And that'll handle 1.22 million gallons per day. And it's set up to treat future expansion in case we need it.
Right, so this plant, it's a green sand plant, and there'll be two green sand filters, so there'll be space for a third filter if we ever need to add that.
And currently, once that goes on to a 1.22, does that cover, what is our usage compared to the 1.22 out of that plant?
Well, our average day demand is 2.4 last year.
No, out of those that well going through that plant, because that's where it's going to come from, right? 3 and 6 are going to go through that plant.
Yes, yeah.
So what are we pumping out of 3 and 6 today?
Right now?
Yeah.
Oh, about 0.25 MGD. So we're going to gain about 1 million gallons a day.
By doing that, we'll gain 1 million. My concern is the future growth, knowing that we've got growth, especially in that area coming up. I don't want to be building a plant that handles 1.22 with future growth being estimated at, let's say, 1.8, right? And we might as well just go for the third now, do it while we're doing it versus turning around and having a problem down the line.
I think with a little confusion there, when we say the expansion, what we're afraid of is we can't take more water out of the ground there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the water that come out of the ground could get worse.
So your expansion is based on the worsening condition
yes.
of the
yes.
water.
The water. So the iron
water coming out of that straw.
Yeah, not
exactly.
to pull any more. We're not permitted to pull any more than 1.22.
Okay. I think that was unclear in the presentation, so I was unclear about it, so about those at home did it. And I think Debbie answered the probability of us running out of water, which is a common question. All right, and then I guess while we're here talking, I hate to switch from water to sewer. Have we done any recent look or observations on the line that goes right along 140, the sewer interceptor line, to see the condition? We talk about that a lot.
Beaver Street.
The Beaver Street.
Yeah, we went through it last year, and it's always monitored. We have a consultant, obviously, but they're out there all the time with the meters, and it's a constant thing. And our obviously our peak flow is we look at in the springtime coming up, and although this winter we're very high because you know we have obviously intrusion there. But yes, we are looking at it. We're working on we've talked about doing a master plan going forward, trying to figure out. We're actually getting a quote right now to just look at options to what to replace. The Beaver Street interceptor, whether it's in plows, you know, going up 140, you know, ring it to rent them, just trying to different options. But yes, we are staying on top of it.
And this, I'm glad you mentioned that because you said a year ago we were talking about it and we seem to still be talking about it. So I'm getting a little nervous that we're doing a lot of talking but not moving forward on the action side of the plan. So I guess, do we have a timeline for a master plan to look at that and move that into something where we're going to be bidding on it? Because I don't want to be sitting as Plymouth was a few years ago with a destroyed line and telling our residents that we're going to have to spend $22 million on something in an emergency situation and nobody can flush the toilets.
We're looking to work with the consultant right now
yeah.
to get an estimate. I think something's due back just to, you know, and this is real basic conceptual because, you know, you hate to say nothing happens, but we're pretty confident right now that the, it's okay. I mean, it is a 112-year-old system that's well past its life expectancy, but every time we've gone out there, it's working, it's still functioning. So. But it is something that we've been looking at. You know, Jeff and Jamie have been talking about it quite a bit about getting the funding to go forward.
I guess my question more is, when do you expect to have something back to the council so we can start having a legitimate conversation on it? 112 is a long
year, right?
Yeah.
So we're another year out before we do that.
Yes.
Yeah. It's tough. And crossing your fingers and waiting for it to hit 113, 114, 115. At some point,
it's gone.
And it's not in a spot where we really want it to break and pollute the location that it's in.
Right.
So
it's not. There's no good spot for that type of break to happen.
Not in the middle of a wetlands.
No, but it's better than 140.
Well, I want to go down the trail real quickly. You remember we had to have a sewer rate increase because we didn't have enough money to pay just the annual sewer bill. So. We had a 10% increase in the sewer rates last year. We have another 10% coming this year. Once those rates come in effect, we'll have enough money to pay for the study.
Okay.
So we've been waiting for the rates to go up because we didn't have any money.
Well, that's a great answer.
So this summer or fall, they can come back and ask for an appropriation to pay for the study.
Okay.
So.
Sounds great. Look forward to it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Councilor Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think. Councilor Kelly, jump in on the part I wanted to jump in on in regards to the interceptor, but
it's not an agenda.
I know.
I let him stray a little bit.
The hypothetically, if we did get 1 million gallons back online, if we treat well 3 and well 6, could our sewer system, quote unquote, handle the additional flow?
Absolutely.
So hypothetically, what effect would that have on the Beaver Street interest?
Well, see, we took 600,000 gallons a day out of the sewer system by continuing to fix that, which is you'll see a request for the next phase probably in a year or two. So every year we fix the sewer system, we fix more leaks of fresh water. So we've already taken 600,000 gallons of fresh water out of the system. If we end up taking another 200,000 or 300,000 or 400,000, there's your 1 million gallons that we've already taken out of the system. And the plant has a zillion gallons of capacity, so.
And the thing to remember with sewer, which is different than water, it's used at different times. So the high flow of sewer, obviously, between 6 o'clock and 7:30 in the morning, our sewer flow goes up tremendously because people are getting up, they're showering, they're bathing, they're having dinner or breakfast, and the same thing at night. You know, that's it. In the middle of the night, there's not much sewer use. So we're cognizant of that. So any new project that comes online, you know, we've been doing over the last 6 or 7 years, we make people hold it on site and then they pump it out. The perfect example is the large, the one up at Upper Union Street,
the big Independence,
that huge, where everybody sees from 495. So they have a huge holding tank there. So all the sewer they collect all day long is collected there. Then they pump it out at 2 o'clock in the morning when the flow that's going through the Beaver Street is very low. And, you know, we look at that for the new DNAB new projects. You know, that's that huge thing that's going over there. So we make them, as part of the mitigation, is they have to pump offline because of our constrictions down there. Because to your point, yes, it would be very difficult to take another 1 million gallons a day at 9 o'clock in the morning. That wouldn't be good anywhere in the system. It actually wouldn't back up on, it wouldn't back up the interceptor. It backs up over on Cottage Street Extension by the railroad tracks. That's our lowest point. Our manholes pop over there. It used to be over on the park, but we fixed that one. So that's what we do through the planning process, and we work with the planning folks because it is a curve that goes up and down on days.
We all set? Thank you, Bruce, and I think. I did let them stray a little bit into sewer, but they are intermingled.
You're right.
Councilor Kelly and Councilor Jones, the interceptor was my question. And I think we have the answer. And obviously looking forward to a year from now when we can continue to move forward with study to get this done.
You know, I'll tell you, I appreciate that you guys are cognizant of it and you're aware of it, because it is a huge issue, and it's going to be very, very expensive. No matter where we put it, it's going to be a huge impact on 140 or wherever we go, you know, just the construction. You know, it's going to be Franklin's big dig, you know, so it's going to be a big thing, and I think through education we start talking about it now. So I appreciate those questions. Thank you.
Could be a crappy situation.
There's one.
We never hear those jokes.
I know.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? In particular, if you have an interest in real estate, zoning, or construction, I would like someone to help us by following the Planning Board, Zoning Board of Appeals, and/or the Conservation Commission meetings. I'll provide the guidance on note-taking and sharing. You need to bring an inquisitive, open mind, and willingness to learn and share. Overall, if you like the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.